Hey marketers, if you want to get the latest news, trends, and insights in marketing, advertising, and tech, check out the Adweek Podcast Network. Learn from leading voices across media and marketing with original shows like Yeah, That's Probably an Ad, Marketing Vanguard, and Tech Magic with Kathy Hackle. Start listening now by searching Adweek wherever you listen to podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/generate to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/generate. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Hey there, are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.
You're listening to Yeah, That's Probably an Ad. This is the Adweek Podcast, where we talk about marketing, media, technology, pop culture, because in the end, everything is an ad. I'm David Greiner. I'm the international editor for Adweek.
And I'm Ko Im. I'm the community editor at Adweek.
And this week, we've got our special guest from our coworker team here, David Kaplan, who has played several roles over time and more recently here at Adweek. I believe at the moment you are the interim editor for our performance marketing and brand marketing teams, right?
I just checked 5 minutes ago. Yes, that is still correct. David, Ko, pleasure to be with you both.
It's great to have you on here. This is, I'm just going to be transparent that we are recording this at an incredibly emotional time for us, for America. We are recording this the day after the killing of 8 people in Atlanta, which I live quite close to Atlanta. And this is hurt for a lot of reasons, but especially because 6 of the victims were women of Asian descent. There has been so much violence and harassment and just really repulsive behavior against Asian Americans, Pacific Islanders over this past year and plus, really fomented a lot by a lot of the political discourse led by Donald Trump and others. But it has continued past Donald Trump's presidency. And to see the violence reach that level, this was the worst mass shooting in almost 2 years here in America. And it's weighing on many people, but no one more so than the Asian American Pacific Islander community, who has already been facing so much and dealing with so much. And I wanted to first just say, you know, if you're not part of this community, be a part of this conversation. Like, don't sit it out. Don't just think this is something happening to other people. This is something happening to your friends, your colleagues, you know, very likely your family as well. And it is something where all of us play a role in addressing this and keeping it from happening, whether it's standing up in public for strangers who face harassment, whether it's standing up for colleagues and friends, whether it's just being there for people and letting your friends and your loved ones know that you're thinking about them. And I think no one has been a better voice for that in my life than Ko Im, my wonderful co-host and our colleague here, Ko. It's tough to ask you to do this, but you recently published a lot of your thoughts on this issue in Newsweek. You have shepherded many as the person overseeing our columns and our opinion columns and guest contributions. You have brought so many wonderful voices to Adweek as part of this discussion for months now. And if it's okay, I would just like you to kind of tell us a bit about what you're feeling and what you would like the community to really be thinking about.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, David, and for our producer, Nick, for facilitating this conversation. You know, as a journalist, you try not to be the focus of a conversation. But I felt compelled after being silent, and that's the stereotype, right? This burdened stereotype of staying silent for Asian Americans. I felt compelled to kind of speak up on behalf of so many people in my community that are feeling all sorts of emotions, including fear of when we go outside, resentment, frustration over what's been called the bamboo ceiling or the glass ceiling, anger at the violence or the portrayal of the horrible biased portrayal of the violence in media. And so it's not just me. There are several Asian American marketers in the community, some of them very, very high level, who are feeling this pain, pain that they feel like it's invisible sometimes. And it's like we're screaming for some help, right? So I am inspired by some of the voices that we've been able to publish, including Annie Katrina Lee from Twitch, Eric Toda from Facebook, and just kind of trying to keep the conversation going and moving the conversation forward so that we can empathize with each other more. You know, since publishing that piece, I've been overwhelmed. A lot of this is triggering in terms of having to look at our news feeds, in terms of people finally asking us, like, hey, what can I do for you? And I think that's key, right? And maybe even now, like, not starting to feel this token burden of having the one to explain why I feel this way. And I am really encouraged by the solidarity that I see among people of color, men of color, and then people outside the direct community, like you, David, who speak up for everybody. So, you know, I've had breakdowns. I've had moments of, believe it or not, cursing. I was in a healing circle yesterday with two therapists of color. It was heartbreaking to hear them just wailing, right, for the space that they've so needed in carrying other people's sadness. And I was just cursing. But it's hard. It's a hard time. And it's going to take a while for everyone to recover, as it does, you know, when you are grieving, when you are processing really big things that in the framework of a pandemic. So that's kind of where I'm at on this in this week. I'm okay to work. I've known how to push aside my emotions to work. But there were moments where I have broken down, and that's okay. That's okay.
Now, one thing that has been, I was going to say helpful. I mean, that makes it sound like we outside of the Asian American Pacific Islander community are owed anything. We're certainly not. I definitely appreciate those who've taken the time to say how we can be part of the support network for others. And again, this is something where you have been such an inspiration for me of just, you know, something. I'm not young, but I will say that something that has taken me a long time to realize is that it's really easy to handle, to not be there for people in the way that you later wish you had been, right? Like, that's one of the easiest regrets on earth, and everyone has that regret. And all you can do is learn from it, right? You miss out on the opportunity to be there for someone. And it's like I always say, you know, always go to the funeral, right? Like, it's one of those things where you can choose not to, and you can have a million reasons for not going to a funeral, and you'll almost always regret it. This is one of those cases where we've seen so many terrible things happen over this past year, It's been such an incredibly tough time for so many communities in America. And each time, a few weeks later, I think I should have done more. I should have been there for people. And so with that, I mean, what are some of the things? I mean, just to put it out there, like, what do you wish more people would do outside of the community just to show support and to be there?
Yeah, I mean, some of the bigger things that people have talked about is go donate to the GoFundMe for Stop AAPI Hate. Great. Why not speak up to your CEO and say, we need to do something so that I, for example, don't need to, right? I remember when a bartender I knew lost his job in the pandemic, and I was like, yo, here's like some money through Venmo. Like, you need something, like, let me know and, you know, go get yourself a drink. In the 12 hours that I posted it, and one of my suggestions was like, go have virtual coffee or go send a friend your coffee. Two people in the Adweek community sent me a Starbucks gift card. Not that I needed it, right? But I was like, oh my God, yes. It was just an immediate, tangible way for me to feel supported. And, you know, other things that you can do, talk to your family and friends. I mean, I think what we're hoping is we know who the good people are. We're trying to reach, you know, in the same way with politics and whatnot, we're trying to reach the people who don't know about it. I've gotten messages about, I didn't know what to say, but I just wanted to reach out, or I didn't know that you were going through all of this. Thank you for enlightening me. Hearing that made bearing my soul out on the page absolutely worth it. Just even help change one person's view on something that they didn't recognize was there before. I will say, like, just for stronger language, this is like a funeral. Eight people were killed. This is a funeral. So please. Yes, go to the funeral, send flowers, write an empathy card or sympathy card, call, bring casserole or boba for that matter. That's kind of what I'll say for now in the way that my brain is at the moment. Or even just like David Kaplan, who has always, always, always been an ardent supporter of mine in the newsroom. And he has spoken up for me beyond this week. And so when I know that when he says something to me, it's always like heartfelt as well. So Kaplan, thank you for that. It's weird because we have two Davids on here. So just go with last names.
Tell the difference. But Ko, as David already said, you are always an inspiration on so many topics. Obviously, this week's tragedy following a way too long a line of recent tragedies. And you have, one thing I wanted to say to you, I feel like you were probably getting so many messages today. One thing I wanted to say to you was how, apart from your inspiration, the idea of how this change happens, like, and as David was just asking, like, what do you want to see? What can people do? And I think one of the things, taking inspiration from you, and then from there, the way things change is when certain behaviors, we're not just talking about obviously murders, but the behaviors and attitudes that allow these murders and these attacks to happen, once it becomes completely unacceptable, that's when things change. And the idea that we're not going to be able to change the hearts and minds of people who have truly twisted psyches, but the ability to act on those twisted psyches can be constrained even if they're not changed. The idea that this person thought he could go to three spas or massage parlors and attack women because for whatever twisted reason, I'm not even dignify his claims, but the idea that he thought that would be accepted in his community, if his community, whether they embrace the ideas that I think the three of us share or not, the idea is that there are lines that can't be crossed And he felt he could cross those lines. The idea, as more of us speak out, more of us share, you know, stories, and it seems like such a small thing to retweet something or even it's so hard, you want to write an article that is so beautiful as you did with the Newsweek piece and so brilliant that, you know, you think, how can anyone with half a mind see this and not think, God, this is insane. I've got to, you know, talk to people who've espoused, you know, even the most mild forms of racism. Not that there is any mild form of racism, but the idea that, you know, someone could see this and not think, what is wrong with the society? The idea is that knowing that there, one, it is not accepted anywhere. You can't get away with it, even if the police treat you nicely than they would if you were maybe someone of another race. The idea is that this is unacceptable. And as people speak out, that fills the void that has been there for too long against Asian American and Pacific Islanders and people, other people who have been attacked, other people of other races and other marginalized groups.
Well, and you point out that this perpetrator, you know, probably thought that his mindset would be understood, which is heinous. But then you see, you know, the way that the law enforcement talks about it, and he's right. They frame it in exactly the way he was hoping it would be framed. And that's the part that, it's not the one part, but it's like, I can't stop feeling nauseous about that because the unfortunate reality, and this is a tough thing as a parent to tell your kids, is that evil's going to happen, right? And you can't always stop it. And that's a real shitty part of this world. But it just is a thing that all of us have to realize. What sucks is when the people that are supposed to look out for us and that are supposed to protect us. And this is no shock probably to a lot of folks in New York listening to this, and I'm sure it's true of other cities, but I have so many friends in New York who've been sharing their stories, right? Their stories of assault and violence that they've faced over the last few years. And there is not one of those stories where the police took it seriously. I've yet to see one. And in most cases, the police were just the worst. Like just, well, sounds like this was a robbery. Like five people don't beat the shit out of one person. Don't like cherry pick one person. That's not a robbery, you know? I don't want us to spend too long on this, not because it is a topic I do want to spend a whole hour on. But also I don't want to, if I'm being honest, I don't want Co to have to, you know, this is a lot to ask of anybody to talk. And I'm so honored. I'm just straight up. It means a lot that you would share what you're going through with us, that you would share it in writing, that you would share it on the podcast. And I just want to say again, like to everyone else, just be there, be a part of this, say things. Like, even if you're afraid you might get it wrong or whatever, if your heart is in the right place and you're standing up for people. And I don't want to sound like I'm kind of subtweeting something here, but like there was this campaign going around the other day, and it wasn't specific to this issue, but it was basically someone trying to get, men, I can't remember if it was specific to white men, but basically trying to get them to commit to silence, to like stop talking, to help elevate women's voices. And I like that goal, of course. I did not like that approach, right? Because I'm like, okay, yes, amplify voices. But at the same time, if you just get another excuse to be silent, there's plenty of those. I'm watching white dudes find plenty of excuses to be silent every day, whether they think they're being respectful, whether they think it doesn't address them or, you know, doesn't affect them. So no, it's like, I don't think Asian American Pacific Islanders should have to carry this burden alone. So thank you again, Co, for,
well, and David, as you've proven, Co is not carrying on you there as well. And I think the other way things change is it's more than one person. It's organizing, and that's the only way to deal with again, it is, to use the term systemic, that's how you beat it back, by everyone of who is sane banding together, organizing, and continuing to fill that void and to, you know, take away that silence and to let it be known. And this is, you know, ties into the way advertising works, to have that message repeated until it no longer needs to be. And hopefully that will be soon, but, you know, it needs to be repeated. And, you know, I'm with you both.
Yeah. And I certainly don't feel alone right now, you know, in some positive ways, but also in some sad ways. But I do want to kind of be mindful of my own, you know, emotional threshold on this today, in terms of just rehashing, or kind of the thing with trauma is like reliving, right? So I would like to move on to other things that we might be passionate about in the marketing world, knowing that it's totally okay to, you know, like if your friend, like for example, if your friend is like, I really want to talk about The Bachelor, dude, just let them, right? Let them have it. Like I watched a Chappelle sketch last night, like just to get my mind off things. So we can, this isn't the last conversation, but we can certainly move on for now.
Let's take a little break and just kind of just a big deep sigh, and then we will be right back to carry on. So be right back.
Oh, welcome back. And we are still here with David Kaplan, our interim brand and performance marketing editor. And before we get back to him, I just wanted to let you know that we do have another print issue coming out March 23rd. So it is all about honoring various performance marketing campaigns, including the Peloton's homecoming collaboration with Beyonce, which is the campaign of the year for social media, and the OnePlus and T-Mobile experiential campaign as well. And then we'll have David talk about Mark Pritchard being the performance marketer of the year from P&G. But first, I also wanted to let you know that we do have a new columnist network. We're always working on kind of new things and new voices here at Adweek. And the Columnist Network will be a group of C-suite level experts who will regularly share their insights into their processes on how they think about everything from experiential to performance marketing to social to DEI to Amazon advertising. So we'll hope that you'll check that out, in addition to the voice pieces that we still regularly put out there. So with that being said, David Kaplan, welcome back.
Kaplan, can I throw a dumb question at you? and I will just because I
my
always
favorite
feel
kind.
This is like level setting for some of us, because I'm not afraid to ask the dumb questions. I will always ask them.
Do it.
I'm going to ask, and then I'm going to attempt to answer, and you tell me how off I am. What is performance marketing? And then I'm going to attempt to answer by saying, from my understanding, it is marketing that is based, where you pay based on how it performed. You don't just say, here's $20,000, run some TV ads. You say, you know, here's $20,000, and then you pay per click, or you pay per view. Like, that's, how close am I on?
I think you are spot on. I think that is the classic definition. For the section, I've tried to open that up a little bit, since it's always been, there's been a lot of overlaps. There's a lot of, you know, there's like what, 10 verticals that Adweek has divided into, and then through that, multiple categories. So for me, I've tried to carve out a niche between what the programmatic ad tech side does and this kind of middle ground area. But I think you basically hit the nail on the head, that it is marketing that is, you know, intensely measurable one by one. So the way I've tried to open it up to not be so niche is to look at the strategies and supporting technologies that influence customer relationships. Customer relationships, that's kind of at the core of what is being paid for. That's the performance part, I guess. You think of lead generation is classic, what you just described, classic performance marketing. It's also, looking at SEO, SEM, direct response, direct mail, one of the oldest performance marketing technologies, if we'll call it that, or at least strategies. And then ultimately looking at, experiential marketing, the idea that this also fits into this hazy area where it's not about an ad campaign, but it's this kind of ongoing relationship building, one-to-one relationship that marketers want to achieve. So it's looking at those tools and attributes that go into those one-to-one relationships. That is what, as I said, goes to those things that fit in off to the side of what traditional advertising will do. Yeah, sorry for the long-winded answer on that one to a very smart question.
I will say it sounds like the recurring theme I hear from people who are active in this space is just that it's not for the faint of heart. And I 100% believe that. Like when I worked at an agency for quite a few years, I mostly worked on just traditional creative campaigns, right? Like you would just make a campaign and the campaign would live out there and you would find some excuses for why you thought that it was effective, right? You would say like, it moved brand awareness from 3.1% to 3.2% or some nonsense. And with performance marketing, you don't have that. And so I worked on direct mail sometimes, and that's a terrifying way to live. Because basically, I was going to name my client. I don't know if I'm a major corporation was my client, and it was just numbers. It was just like the ad you made got sorted in a spreadsheet by effectiveness, and whatever was at the top. They used what's called a champion challenger model, where if you were the champion, your piece continued in rotation. It kept being circulated as direct mail, and then you would have challengers until something toppled the champion. And I remember there was like a 2 month or 3 month period where I had the champion for like this entire massive corporation, and it's like cool, but at the same time, very like Highlander, like you're always ready for someone to come along and chop off your head, like right behind you of like outperforming. It's so competitive. And when the numbers, like I've heard this a lot about paid search campaigns or whatever it is, that when the numbers start to go down and you have like no control over it, like you can move some things around, but it's just like Google made a change and now none of your ads work and you are out of work. Like and people are like, apparently has the highest like rating ratio of depression. Like there are all these mental health issues specific to performance marketing because it is just a live by the numbers, die by the numbers job.
This sounds like Hunger Games. Like it's so cutthroat. And it's interesting that Mark Pritchard is the performance marketer of the year, because when I think about him, I think of him as like just so much heart and so gentle, but like, is he cutthroat? Like what is he really like? And why did he get this award?
I was very happy. I've known Mark through various points throughout the years, my years doing reporting on advertising, been doing for like, really 20 years since I started at Adweek actually then. And so I can very, very much say, no matter how dumb my questions have been to him, he's always been incredibly gracious and easygoing. So always appreciate that. I will say one of the things we did talk about was looking back at why he is the performance marketer of the year, we talked about this campaign that Procter & Gamble started last year called Lead with Love, which we could all use, right? After, especially these days, and in how he was able to talk about that in terms of putting some sort of metric to acts of good that they wanted to see. And I think it seems hard to quantify something as very hazy as a good. It's kind of something very subjective. But they wanted to promote, they wanted to connect their consumers' values, most of their consumers' values. They're such a huge company. Everyone pretty much buys something from Procter & Gamble at some point, and have that company reflected in a way that is not this kind of jumping on the bandwagon that everyone thinks like, oh, we have to sort of represent this you know, deeper standard of what is expected of a good company and a company that people will continue wanting to support or very easily can start a campaign to reject, as we've seen with, say, controversies of, you know, involving, say, you know, just off the top of my head, Goya Brands and their CEO's support for Trump, that sort of thing. And so for them, you know, being able to measure that was a way of, in keeping with this hyper vigilant idea of being able to just, you know, get quantify everything, but also to keep it open and not so rigid. So that's, I think that he's trying to do a lot of balancing acts. And I think that's also goes into why he would be named Performance Marketer of the Year, because this idea of, you know, it's not just numbers, it's got to have some meaning. And there's, and in order to drive those numbers, other things that you really can't quite put a metric to as precisely as you can with a click, is also something that he's been able to incorporate. So Mark Pritchard, nice guy, Performance Marketer of the Year. But that's not obviously the only reason. He also talked about, you know, the idea that fascinated me in terms of measuring, consumer packaged goods products and how well it was tied to their advertising, was looking at how last year demand for consumer packaged goods just obviously hit the ceiling as people were forced to stay home and freaked out to buy as many, you know, canned goods and Pampers and other things like that. According to NC Solutions, online and in-store CPG rose 14%. And so what do you do when all the models that you've put into place all these years, you can count on, you know, particular shopping patterns and go by that. What do you do when it's blown up? And that's also what I wanted to hear him explain in terms of, you know, especially everyone's data driven. Procter & Gamble know less than anyone else. How do they do that? And he was able to talk about how they were able to slowly move to capture consumer sentiment and then adjust accordingly, which is easier said than done.
Yeah, and it's been really intriguing to watch Procter & Gamble over the last few years. Like, I will say that these companies used to be P&G, J&J, you know, all these like umbrella companies. They used to be just so invisible. Like, they had no real, I mean, they were huge. Like, you knew, if you had asked me anything about Procter & Gamble, 6-7 years ago, it would have been like, they're big. They have a lot of money. But I think they've really kind of changed the nature of what it is to be this parent company. And they've gotten a bit more top down with these brands instead of just like, yeah, we've got Dove and Dove goes out and does their thing. And, you know, we've got Axe and Axe goes out and does Axe's thing. It really feels like you're seeing a lot more of this. And I feel like P&G's kind of been the, you know, the leader in that space. But you're seeing it more from Johnson & Johnson now. You're seeing it more from J.M. Smucker, right? Is like now a pretty big parent company. They own Jif, Smucker, Folgers, I think Folgers Coffee. And like several others, and you're seeing them moving more as parent companies and like allocating their money in a more strategic way instead of just letting brand managers go nuts. That's interesting.
Exactly. I think that, these days when people are so media savvy, to even if they're not involved in media and advertising at all, they know it. I still remember when I first joined Adweek 20 years ago, I maybe heard of Procter & Gamble in a certain sense, but I also always remember how one of the first things I wrote, my editor freaked out because I spelled Procter with a T-O-R. And he was like, what are you talking about? This is the most important advertising brand in history. You can never spell their name wrong. And I was like, well, I didn't know. Procter & Gamble was not that much on my mind before I joined Adweek, but I believe if I joined now, I would have, you know, known how to spell that. There you go.
All right. Well, I encourage everyone to check out our Performance Marketing Awards winners. It's a new awards here at Adweek. And check out our performance marketing coverage. If you're in that, get to know David Kaplan and his team. As you can tell by us slapping interim in front of all of David's job titles that, you know, we're moving things around. And it says a lot about David and how much faith that everyone here has in him to put these very important teams under him while we, you know, kind of decide how we're going to be structuring that for the future. So if you're in performance marketing, now's a good time to get to know them and get to be a part of that conversation. So check out those, check out our story on P&G and Performance Marketer of the Year. And yeah, there's a lot of good stuff on adweek.com. Thank you again so much to Co, to David Kaplan for joining us, to Nick Gardner, our producer, for bringing all this together. This is a tough time to have any conversation, much less one that's specific to what's going on in our lives. And it just means so much to have you all as coworkers and to be able to have this conversation each week. So thank you, everybody. All right. Our theme music is by Home. This week's episode is produced by Nick Gardner and edited by Lane McGivney. If you've not already, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Those reviews mean a lot to us personally, and they help new listeners discover the show. You can reach us anytime at podcast@adweek.com. That's podcast@adweek.com. For Adweek, I'm David Greiner, and we will be back next week.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hats because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.